Before They Were UFOs by Charles Lear. The very first flying saucer flap occurred during the summer of 1947. It began with the reported sighting of nine mysterious objects by pilot Kenneth Arnold on June 24th and hit its peak that July. This was the first summer of the saucers. Much has been written about Arnold's sighting, but the sightings after that have been largely ignored. For the interested student in this period of UFO history, there is a document available online that is well worth reading. It provides a comprehensive account of the flap, citing a large number of newspaper articles that appeared during that time. Housed at the University of Iowa is a thesis paper written in 1948 titled The Flying Saucers Episode. Link available in the written version of this blog. It was submitted by State University of Iowa journalism graduate student Emil Ern Wennergren as part of the requirements for his Master of Arts degree. It is also available at the National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomena website, link available. Besides providing insight into the fervor of the time and the effect it had on Arnold, there is an early look at the events at Roswell. Most amusing is the conclusion by Wennergren that Roswell marked the end of what was just a passing fascination. In the introduction, Wennergren notes that many articles refer to DISKS and DISCS. The reader is informed that, according to Webster's International Dictionary, DISK refers to an inanimate object, whereas DISC is the preferred spelling in zoology and botany. He then describes Arnold's sighting of, quote, nine shiny objects, end quote, near Mount Rainier in Washington State. Arnold told reporters that they flew with a motion, quote, like a fish flipping in the sun, end quote. The story was on page one of the June 26th edition of the Portland Oregonian and spread to papers throughout the United States that same day. Not in the thesis paper is the origin story for the term flying saucers. When Arnold spoke with reporters, he described that the craft flew erratically, quote, like a saucer if you skip it across water, end quote. In the June 26, 1947 East Oregonian to Pendleton, reporter Bill Biquette wrote that Arnold had, quote, described the objects as saucer-like. The story went out on the news wires, and other papers reported that Arnold had seen, quote, saucer-like objects, end quote. The Chicago Sun picked up the story, and their headline for it that same day was, quote, Supersonic Flying Saucers Sighted by Idaho Pilot, end quote. From then on, people all over the country began seeing, quote, flying saucers, end quote. As of June 26th, Arnold was famous, and his name was forever linked in history with flying saucers. Soon people were seeing them everywhere, and they became a media sensation. Papers that carried saucer stories, more often than not, printed them on page one into the first half of July. While Arnold was genuinely puzzled and interested in getting some answers as to what the objects might have been, Wennergren noted that the media treated the saucers as a novelty. According to him, the subject, quote, tickled the funny bones in the same manner as the bow ties and sock wear worn by the Bobby Sox multitudes, end quote. Arnold was besieged by both the media and the public. His woes are described in an article in the June 28th Portland Oregonian. He told the paper that a preacher from Texas had called him. The preacher told him that the saucers marked the beginning of, quote, doomsday, end quote, and he was, quote, getting his flock ready for the end of the world, end quote. Arnold also said that when he was in a Pendleton cafe on June 26th, a woman came in, recognized him, and ran out shrieking, there's the man that saw the men from Mars. He summed up what he perceived was the public's opinion of him, quote, half the people look at me as a combination Einstein, Flash Gordon, and Screwball, end quote. Fortunately for Arnold, a man came forward with a report that supported his sighting. The June 26th Denver Post reported that another pilot, Brian Savage, of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, reported seeing a, quote, flat, disc-like object come across the city from the southeast, end quote. He claimed to have seen it weeks before Arnold's sighting made the papers. According to him, it had a, quote, shiny silvery color, end quote, was, quote, very big and moving at a terrific rate of speed, end quote. He noted that it, quote, didn't make any noise, end quote, which would be a common description among witnesses well beyond 1947. Another report quickly followed. The June 27th Chicago Tribune carried the description of a Kansas City, Kansas man. He reported seeing nine objects, quote, with one a little off to one side, end quote. Skeptics immediately weighed in and accused both men of making up their stories based on what Arnold had reported. Savage countered by saying he had been afraid of ridicule and that Arnold's sighting had encouraged him to come forward. Others reported that they had seen saucers before Arnold. They, too, said that they had only come forward because of Arnold. An unfortunate aspect of Arnold's sighting report was that he was the sole witness. Because he appeared to be a particularly credible witness, his story was considered newsworthy. That set a precedent for editors to accept other single-witness testimonies. Story after story appeared with a single witness, often with an emphasis on their credibility as the sole support. Multiple witness reports eventually started being reported. The June 28th Denver Post reported that seven witnesses who worked for the Manitou and Pikes Peak Railroad said they'd seen objects similar to what Arnold had seen. The June 29th Portland Oregonian carried the story of a group of friends in San Francisco. They said they heard, quote, swishing, whistling sounds over the bay, end quote, and then saw objects, quote, 30 to 50 feet across, end quote, flying in a northerly direction. The July 1st edition of the same paper told of a high school student and two nuns who claimed they had seen nine disks flying over La Grande, Oregon. Winogrand noted that for the first 3 days in July, flying saucer stories were absent from most of the larger dailies throughout the country except for those in the Pacific Northwest. Then July 4th brought a, quote, deluge, end quote, of reports that made the national news. In the July 5th Portland Oregonian, there was a story that involved multiple highly credible witnesses. Portland police had been put on a, quote, all-car alert, end quote, after three patrolmen, two in one car and one in another, reported seeing objects. One of them described the objects as, quote, aluminum or eggshell white disks that did not flash, end quote. Many other officers were listed as having seen disks that night. The July 6th edition carried an Associated Press story of 200 witnesses in Idaho who'd reportedly seen a disk over Hauser Lake. The July 5th Minneapolis Star reported that, in the city of Twin Falls, Idaho, 60 picnickers observed, quote, several echelons of disks in the afternoon, end quote. A July 4th sighting reported by a captain, co-pilot, and stewardess aboard a United Airlines DC-3 received major attention and was not easily refuted by skeptics. Captain Emil J. Smith, himself a skeptic, was alerted when his co-pilot, Ralph Stevens, blinked the landing lights. Smith asked him why he was doing so, and Stevens replied, quote, there's a plane approaching our bow, end quote. Smith described the events in a letter written for the International News Service. He wrote that he and Stevens quickly saw that the object was not a plane, but a, quote, flying disc, end quote. They then saw four more, and though they couldn't determine their, quote, exact shape, end quote, they noted that they were larger than the DC-3, quote, fairly flat, smooth on the bottom, and rough on top, end quote. Smith called the stewardess, Marty Morrows, to the cockpit, and she confirmed their sighting. Arnold would soon befriend Smith, and Smith would accompany him on his investigation of the Maury Island incident. Link available. Arnold wrote about his sighting, Smith's sighting, and their investigation together in two articles in the January 1948 premier issue of Fate magazine. He later recounted the events in the first five chapters of the 1952 book, The Coming of the Saucers, co-written with Fate publisher and editor, Ray Palmer. According to Winogrand, the, quote, flying saucers lived a short, full life, end quote. After, quote, the incident at Roswell Field, end quote, flying saucer stories appeared less frequently in newspapers. Finally, quote, an unaccountable phenomenon was retired to the newspaper Valhalla, the morgue, end quote. The incident at Roswell Field, link available, refers to the July 8th press release from Roswell Airfield that they were, quote, fortunate enough to gain possession of a disc through the cooperation of one of the local ranchers, end quote. The statement was released by the public information officer, Lieutenant Walter Hout. The story was front page, and the world eagerly awaited the answer to the flying saucer mystery. The answer came from Major General Roger Ramey that evening in a radio broadcast from Fort Worth, where the, quote, disc, end quote, had been examined. Newspapers reported the story the following day with, quote, conspicuously small, end quote, headlines. According to Ramey, the Air Force had recovered a weather balloon. Winogrand closed Chapter 4 of his thesis with the following, quote, thereafter, if the saucers flew, they flew in silence, because the nation's press was through with them. Their appeal had burst in some vague manner after their dramatic appearance in New Mexico. Their swan song was a short one and faded quickly, end quote. Whew! Glad the hullabaloo over that particular mystery ended so quickly, or we might still be talking about it.